Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and I'm joined every week by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, I've decided it's John Mellencamp Day at the Coach K and Joe Show, and, you know, I felt like the opening song was a little relevant because of I think Assembly Hall's falling down, isn't it?
Well, the roof is falling in, literally, on the IU basketball program, Joe, with the falling metal pieces from the rafters. And, you know, it's easy for us to joke about it today because it happened before the Iowa game and no one, thank God, got hurt.
Yes, at first, thank God.
And at first people thought it was just a little piece of aluminum, but as I got a picture from a listener, it was clear that it was a heavy piece of metal that braced the end of the roof area, not a huge kind that would crush a floor, but it did crush several seats, and had anybody been sitting there, they definitely would have not woken up, or they would have awakened in about two weeks maybe with a very large bump on the head. So we're thankful that it was taken care of. But you know what this does, Joe?
You know
It reaffirms Coach K's assertion from a couple months ago when the big donation was made by Cook Belisco, whatever her name was, and they're going to use the money to put a new front on Assembly Hall and make it more physically and marketing attractive. And then maybe make some updates in some other places for large business donors. It goes back to my assertion that the heck with that. And I know at the time we had Mike Pegram on from Pegs.com, and he said that it wasn't financially viable. Well, I'm saying it's financially viable. I'm saying this is clearly a reason for Indiana University, the athletic department, and Fred Glass, and yes, I'm calling you Fred, to put the money together, start putting the seed money in there, start doing the work, and let's build a new basketball facility on campus. Let's get it done. If we have to play a season up at Bankers Life in Indianapolis, we'll still pack the place with Hoosier fans, but let's build a new basketball arena on the IU campus in Bloomington. Joe, I think I make a valid point at this time.
Well, you know, did you see the video? I mean, the video was kind of scary. If people were sitting in that section, there would have been a couple people crushed. And thank God it happened hours earlier and not with a packed Assembly Hall, because it would have been disastrous. And, you know, maybe this is their chance to maybe build a new arena. I agree. I mean, I think it's time. I think Assembly Hall is a you know, tradition-rich building, but not a very fan-friendly building. And, you know, maybe IU's got a chance to do it right. But they did have the girls' game there. The women's team played, and the funny thing was a lot of the fans that came wore hard hats. Thought that was interesting, kind of a little play. Just you said, we can joke about it a little bit now, but there would have been no joking if the place would have been filled.
No, and I don't blame them for wearing the hard hats and having some fun with it. But Fred Glass had to have a lot of confidence to have that game in Assembly Hall, that girls' game, even though it doesn't draw a lot of fans, although the Hoosier women are playing very, very well this year. I would have been concerned to do that. But And I think maybe for me, Joe, the reason I would have had some concern is because we know what happened at Jasper a couple years ago when the roof caved in the gymnasium, and had they been in a situation where they would have had people in the gym from prom after prom, it could have been devastating. But things look like they are in repair. I'm sure the people who built, who engineered and designed Assembly Hall up at Purdue, the next generation came in to help us get it straightened out. Purdue already crushed us once at West Lafayette, and I hope they didn't come down to crush us in Assembly Hall. So we'll see. Joe, I got a question for you. Jerry Palm just put out his new bracketology. Can you go to CBSSports.com/Jerry and pull that up? And when you get there, we'll talk a little bit about who he's got. Okay, while you're doing that, I'm just going to go in and talk a little bit about Wichita State and why I believe Wichita State should be number one in the country. I know some people had them 4 before the Syracuse loss. Others had them 2. They should be number one, absolutely number one. And this is why, folks, agree or disagree, you're welcome to tweet, call the show, whatever you want to do. Wichita State is undefeated. They are in a consistently successful conference that participates in the NCAA tournament. They were in the Final Four last year with much of the same team back. So just those 3 points right there, they've been in the top 4 in the rankings. Some have them 2, some have them 4, and I think some even have them 3. But the bottom line is, do not snub Wichita State for Florida. Do not snub Wichita State for an Arizona who is struggling. I don't care about Billy Donovan and his past. I care about what's going on. We've got a Final Four team in Wichita State with most of their players back. They have run the gamut. They are undefeated in the country. Undefeated. Regardless of what you think of the Missouri Valley Conference, without Creighton in it, Missouri Valley Conference continually competes well in the NCAA tournament. So, folks, let's not mess around here. I know Jerry Palm has them as a number one seed, and well, he should. But I am asking the sports writers and the coaches and whoever else has put it out there, Wichita State should be the number one ranked team in the country based on 3 things. 1, they are undefeated in 28 games, I believe. 2, they are a Final Four team from last year with the majority of the team returning. And 3, they participate in a conference that has continued to surprise and excel in the NCAA tournament. So, Joe, that's my take on Wichita State. They should be number 1.
He has moved Wichita State up to the number one seed. They are the number one seed. Syracuse is the number one seed. Florida and Arizona are all number one seeds, but he states that he has moved Wichita State into the number one spot as far as the number one seeds. Some of the things he's done is he's dropped Minnesota quite a bit. They would now play as a number 12 seed in the opening round on that Tuesday night deal. And Oklahoma State an 11. So those are kind of a little preview there. But he did say that Wichita State is now his number one seed in the tournament. His last 4 in right now include Oklahoma State, Tennessee, Providence, and Minnesota. His first 4 out include St. John's, Dayton, Georgetown, and Arkansas.
I got to tell you, Joe, I just think at this point, in my opinion, Minnesota should be out, period. I think they have failed. They have failed a couple of games that they should have won. And I have said from the beginning, and people got mad at me, but I did not think the Big Ten Conference was the powerhouse conference that people claimed it was. You've got IU sitting in the bottom half, Purdue sitting in the bottom half. You don't know which Minnesota team is going to show up. Michigan can get beat on any night, and you can say, well, Coach K, any team could get beat on a given night. No, Michigan can get beat. Michigan State has to get healthy, although they did show some strides forward with a resounding, and I'm not trying to start trouble with you here, Joe, but a resounding win in West Lafayette last night.
Yes, they did. They were hot. They did what they had to do, had a great night shooting threes. Feel like they were shooting threes and you know, stroking it, but also a lot of open threes without someone in their face. Would have been nice to see a little bit better defense, but you can't take anything away from them. They had the open shots, they hit them.
I agree with you 100%. I do not think Purdue, after coming off such a big win emotionally, and they played really, really well against IU. I was surprised that they would come back with an IU hangover against Michigan State. And not only were a lot of shots wide open, and you got to give Michigan State credit for knocking them down, but Purdue continues to take ill-advised shots in bad situations. Hammonds,
yep,
taking some perimeter shots when he could have been going down inside and creating foul, even more foul trouble situation for Michigan State earlier in the game. I just am a little shocked at Coach Painter and his staff's inability at this point, and you know I've always been a fan of Coach Painter, to get those guys to recognize better shots. These aren't 6th and 7th and 8th graders that are even high school players. These are Division I Big Ten players.
I knew that Purdue was in trouble. Early in the game, Ronnie Johnson got a rebound, took off. It was 1-on-3 the wrong way, and he proceeded to take it in, all 5'10 of him. He ended up with his face facing the Michigan State bucket and threw the ball up over his head, not even knowing for sure where the rim was. And, whenever he's played that way, Purdue's not been very successful. But against IU, he was more of a facilitator and, did a nice job. And, it was total night and day. The senior Tyrone Johnson continues to just labor. Can I say labor enough? And, I know you want to stick with your seniors, but he is playing so poorly right now that someone like Kendall Stevens and Sterling Carter need to take more of his minutes, because it's not like a Chris Kramer situation where Chris wasn't the greatest of scorers, but he did so many of the other things for you, and I'm not sure that Tyrone is doing those things right now. I don't see that he's doing those, so...
I would agree, and even if they have done those things at some point, they're not doing it on a consistent basis as you would 25, 28, 29 games into the season. They're sitting at 15-11, I believe, Joe, and IU sitting
yep.
at 14-10 or something like that. Neither team has brought it to the table, regardless of age of players. I'm not going to go into that stuff because I think it's ridiculous bringing that up. It is a factor, but improvement has to be shown as the season goes on. And I know in Bloomington, the coaching staff is starting to get a lot of criticism, one, for making excuses about the age of their players, and two, because they had wanted recruiting classes that haven't panned out, and three, not being able to play quality basketball in the last 4 minutes. Whether you pull it off or not, listen to what I'm saying, whether you pull it off or not, it's playing quality basketball in the last 4 minutes, and we haven't done that in Bloomington. You know, Joe, we're talking, if you just joined us, we're talking bracketology right now for the NCAA tournament. A guest of ours several times, CBS Sports bracketologist Jerry Palm, on CBSSports.com, puts out his updated NCAA tournament bracket. So if you want, you can go there. Joe's looking at it right now. You can call us with any comments or questions at 773-897-6325, or you can Facebook message the show, tweet us at Coach K and Joe, or you can text me at 812-480-9449. But as we look at those brackets a little bit, Joe, is there any, and I mean any, school from Indiana in this bracket?
Well, we talked last week that IU, Purdue, Fort Wayne might be our only hope, but he still has, and they're only going to get one team in, and he still has North Dakota State as their representative. So, you know, it's a situation where I guess Indiana people ought to be watching those conference tournaments and hoping for something to shake, because otherwise it doesn't look good for the state of Indiana. And gosh, I'd like to know the last time a team from Indiana has not been in the big dance, because I would even like to know when the last time Purdue and IU both simultaneously weren't in the big dance, because I think that would be quite a while in itself. And I got a question for you. This is Coach K Mailbag from Joe and Jasper. Are IU and Purdue even guaranteed an NIT bid? And also, let me preface this, with Purdue playing so poorly and uninterested in that CBI or whatever last year, do either team even take do they even try to play in something like that, or do they just end their season?
Well, first of all, Joe, if I was a Big Ten team of any note, I would not be playing in the .coms and the CBIs. I mean, basically, you have to pay to play, and that's ridiculous.
Yes.
NIT-wise, there's a good chance they may not get in, that both of them may not get in, depending on how they end up this season. They have an opportunity, one, because of the conference they're in, and two, because they should bring at least support if games are played at their home facilities. They're going to bring out fans, but when you talk about it, yeah, there's a real chance they won't get in. For example, Joe, Indiana, IU, according to Jerry Palm, has a 105 rank. Purdue has a 116 rank. Indiana State in Terre Haute, the trees, as they're called, the land of Larry Bird, the Sycamores, they have a 55 rank. So that just tells you how far IU and Purdue have fallen. And I think I'm accurate in that. I just put Indiana State in, and they came out 55th. So, Joe, to answer your question, there's a good chance they could not make the NIT. And by gosh, neither one of them should be paying to play in a tournament like CBI or the .coms. It just shouldn't happen. They shouldn't do it.
I think Purdue learned their lesson last year. You know, even my daughter, when she was at Marshall, they made that tournament. They were disappointed they didn't make the NIT. And, you know, they came out and laid a big egg, too, just acted like it was totally uninterested to play. And I think for some of these real small conferences, it might be a really big honor for them. But I agree that I think Big Ten schools should shy away from those type of tournaments. And, I think last year Painter thought it was important maybe to get the young kids a few more games, and I think he realized he made a mistake about halftime of the game lost last year in CBI. And just think that it's just not worth the time. I think that just end it at that point and go from there. Get busy on the recruiting trail.
There's no upside to those tournaments for a Big Ten team. There is no upside for those teams because you're supposed to win it. You're from the Big Ten. And secondly, if you lose, especially if you lose early, boy, does that really put a black cloud and program your season and potentially your future. I just got a text, Joe, from someone asking, what about Notre Dame? And the Fighting Irish, who are in a struggle this year as well, I said that at the beginning of the year, and then I changed my tune after they won two or three big games against what were supposed to be top-level teams. They handled Indiana. Well, I should have stuck with my original thoughts on Notre Dame. They're presently 14-13 and 5-9 in the ACC, and they have a rank of 112. So listen to this. Purdue's got a rank of 116. Notre Dame's got a rank of 112. IU has a rank of 105. And we jump down to Indiana State at 55. So without Indiana State, we don't have anyone that has a legitimate shot to make the tournament unless, as you pointed out, Joe Milligan, of the Coach K and Joe Show, tournament time. The Big Ten tournament is their best chance. The ACC tournament is the best chance. But I'm not sure that unless IU can win the rest of its games, and I mean every regular season game left, and get to the final game of the tournament, they could get in. I don't think that splitting the rest of their regular season games and then getting to the final game gets them into the tournament. And if it would, I think the NCAA would be a travesty, because this IU basketball team has not shown at any point in time that it is good enough to be an NCAA tournament team. And I'm sorry, IU fans, and I certainly don't want to make the IU coaching staff mad, because we'd certainly like to have Coach Crean or Coach Beckley or someone like that on the show at some point. But let's face it, as a coach, sometimes you got to look at your team and say, we're just not getting it done. You can't make excuses. This is the hand you're dealt. What do they say in Hoosiers? What did Coach say? This is our team, and this is what we're going to play with. And you do the best, the very best you can. But the most important thing, Joe, and I'll throw this question to you, between Purdue and IU, has either team or which one of these teams has shown what you would call real improvement through the season?
Very inconsistent is all I can say about both of them. Purdue's kind of been on an even keel, not very good. IU's had some big wins, but then followed them up with some big losses. But looking at these brackets, I guess Hoosiers, not talking IU, talking people that live in the state of Indiana, I guess we can always be for New Mexico or UCLA. You know, they're both coached by people from Indiana, which New Mexico's in the number 9 line taking on Kansas State, and UCLA's number 6 taking on SMU in Jerry Palm's projection. So I guess we're going to have to find something to – I guess we can cheer against Kentucky, you know. But it's going to be kind of a – I don't know. Is it? I love the NCAA tournament, but how is it going to be affected when there's just no – no Indiana people? I guess we got St. Louis too we could cheer for. So I'm trying to find teams that I can throw out to people that maybe they can be for, because I'm not looking down this line of teams. Other than the teams that are coached by people connected to Indiana, the state of Indiana, I don't see anything. So
yeah, I agree with you, Joe. It's going to be an emotionless NCAA tournament for a lot of people other than their brackets. Now, you pointed out some great things. Noodles, Craig Neal, doing a great job in his first stint as head coach. Former U of E coach and IU player, Jim Cruz, who people in Evansville, and I was in Evansville, and I'm a friend of Coach Cruz and always respect him as coach. People turned on him because of some really scathing media articles by a writer for the Evansville Courier who was 4'11", never played basketball in his life, and Coach Cruz, who's a very quiet individual, he's very quiet. He's very humble. He doesn't like to get out in the public eye, would not give him what this reporter felt. I'm not going to say the reporter's name. Felt was adequate access, and he began criticizing Coach Cruz in the newspaper, and every time U of E stumbled. He got on him worse. The guy no longer is with the Evansville Courier. He left after a few years. But Coach Cruz paid a major price publicly because of it. And then he had a couple of teams that were playing at such a high level for U of E in Division I. You knew they were going to have some respite, some time in the cycle. And he's just doing a great job at St. Louis. He went to West Point, which is it's a black hole for any coach, period. It has been since the late 60s. Coach Cruz, his St. Louis team, is a team that you've got to be careful of. I saw him play again the other night. They're quick. They're strong. They're mature, can shoot. And he has them in a great, great game. So you've got some emotional ties. And, Joe, how about a Purdue name, Bruce Weber? You know, I'm going to throw this out to you. Was Bruce Weber the problem at Illinois, or is Illinois the problem at Illinois? Because John Gross isn't doing much better with that team, with this team. And I know recruiting takes a few years, but Bruce Weber did well at Southern Illinois. He was an outstanding assistant at Purdue. He really was. His way is a little bit more relaxed than what most people might want, at least publicly it is. But he's gone to Kansas State. They've had some big wins again this year, and they're looking pretty solid. Are they a great team? No, I don't think they're a great team, Joe. But Bruce Weber, let's give him some kudos.
Well, you know, you may not be a great team, but I know IU and Purdue would take that type of team right now, you know. And, Illinois was just a bad situation for him. He's went to Kansas. I was happy that he went. He got that job right away at Kansas State, and he's done a good job there. A lot of people attribute, Purdue kind of started sinking down in the rankings to Bruce leaving, when it was Coach Katie, and then a lot of people, also another Purdue coach that's right now, he's listed in the NCAA tournament, is Conzo Martin's Tennessee Volunteers. And I know Coach Martin, the recruiting kind of dropped off when he left. And, I have a brother that's a big Tennessee fan. Mike, if you're listening, too bad for you. The thing is, though, Conzo's done a decent job there, but those people in Tennessee, they're just crazy. He's been there 2 years, and they say that he's probably going to get fired at the end of the year. He's bringing in decent recruits. He's had some respectable records. Has Tennessee ever been a major, major, major power where they should expect him to they fired Bruce Pearl, and, do they expect him to turn it around in 2 years when it was kind of a mess? Wasn't quite the mess that Coach Crean had to walk into, but it wasn't a pretty situation either, and not quite understanding Tennessee fans, and they're wanting to get rid of him after 2 years.
Well, I really believe when they gave him the job, it was temporary for several different reasons. But Tennessee has always wanted to be they're what I would call a wannabe. They want to be a top team in the country. They want to be a top team in the SEC. They want to be. And Bruce Pearl had him up there for a while, but Bruce couldn't keep the other parts of his life in check, as well as the recruiting side. And they've just never been a consistent player, but they do, they have to recruit against a lot of good schools in an area that I believe does not produce a lot of great basketball players. And I mean numbers-wise. There's some great basketball players that come out of there, but it's more of a football oriented area. Joe, I know you're going to want to go get Michael Lewis for our guest coming up in this second half of this first hour, and we probably are going to go to break as soon as we know that we've got Michael on the line. So to kind of finish up our NCAA bracketology talk, of course, North Carolina had a really nice win against Duke. Duke has lost a couple of really tough games and really could have lost three games in this stretch. They lost to Syracuse, of course, and then they lost to North Carolina. North Carolina is that team, folks, that we haven't really heard much about this year. They've been so inconsistent, although I believe they put together an 8-game winning streak in the conference. So, they're not done yet. you people in Chapel Hill and all around that area, they are not done yet. North Carolina might be peaking at just the right time. Syracuse, of course, got beat by a woeful Boston College team. But, folks, if you follow basketball, if you follow sports, then you saw this one coming. They've had two or three games that they were very fortunate to walk out with victories. Very fortunate to walk out with victories. So you could just see that they were sliding a little bit. I do not think this is in any way detrimental to Syracuse and their ability to go to a Final Four. It just was ready to happen. Mentally, they had hit some resistance, and when you do that, sometimes physically things just don't move and work the way they're supposed to, and it caught up with them. So, you know, they dropped from the undefeated ranks. That leaves Wichita State undefeated. They got to be number one. They got to be number one when you're coming off a Final Four appearance with most of your team back. You're playing in a conference that usually does very well in the NCAA tournament. And they're undefeated, folks. Give them some credit all over the polls, not just in a couple, all over the polls. But we'll keep you updated on bracketology for the NCAA tournament. We'll talk more college basketball as we keep moving forward, and we'll get Jerry Palm from CBS back on the show, and he can take any questions you have. Michael Lewis is going to be coming up for us to talk some Butler basketball, and it has been a struggle for the Bulldogs this year, but I know they don't quit because I know they got one heck of an assistant coach in Michael Lewis. I know they're going to keep busting it. They entered a new league, and they entered. They got their eyes open in a lot of different ways, and we'll talk with Michael. I'm assuming, Joe, that we're ready to go to break. So let's go to our first break. When we come back, we got Michael Lewis, assistant coach of the Butler Bulldogs. We'll talk dogs when we come back. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Ubelar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Tyler Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. You're talking and listening with the coach, Ken Schulteis, as we get moving on this Friday edition. We enter the second half of the first hour, and we are very, very happy to enter that second half of the first hour with a good friend of the show, an outstanding coach, and a member of the Butler Bulldog coaching staff, Michael Lewis. Good to have you with us on this Friday.
Coach, good to be with you. How are things down in southern Indiana today?
They are warming up, Michael. They are warming up a little bit. We actually can look out the window. We see no snow. We see no ice, and we have all sunshine. What about up in that Indianapolis area?
Well, it was 60 yesterday, and you kind of got the feel of you know, high school tournaments are around the corner, and then you wake up this morning and we got some snow flurry. So it's hit or miss up here.
Well, I will actually, excuse me, after the show, I will be headed up to Indianapolis. I'm going to go out to watch Cathedral and Ben Davis play my nephew and godson, Matt Schulteis, Donnie's son, plays for Cathedral's JV team. So I'm going to be up there to watch him play tonight. But let's talk a little Butler basketball. I know that this first year in the new conference is not going, or at least on paper for most people, isn't going the way Butler fans would have liked. But talk to us a little bit about, Michael, where you guys are at and your takeaway at this point of the season, good or bad, on the Bulldogs.
Well, I think, you know, for the most part, our guys have competed, you know, really hard. You know, I think there's maybe a game or two that as a staff you look back and feel like our guys didn't, you know, play to the standard of what's become Butler basketball. I'm looking back on the season and how this whole thing started. I think you need to remember that, you know, I'm not sure that a program has risen as quickly as Butler has in the history of college basketball. You know, 18 months ago, you're sitting in the Horizon League, and right now you have a roster of guys that were recruited to win a Horizon League championship. Man, I think that this roster would be very capable of doing so. The problem is you're into the Big East, and you're making a jump of two leagues in a very short amount of time. And from a roster standpoint, I'm not sure we're completely ready to compete at that level three times a week. You know, obviously, I think Butler in the past has shown that they can compete with anybody. This team that we currently have has shown that they can compete with anybody in the country. The difference is it being, you know, doing it a weekend in November and a weekend in December and then doing it in March compared to doing it, you know, three nights a week in January and February. I think we've found it obviously to be difficult, and it's worn on your bodies. It wears on you mentally. But you know, our guys continue to fight. They continue to show up at practice every day with a spirit and an enthusiasm to get better. And so from a coaching staff, you're happy with that. Obviously, you're not happy with the results, and you continue to work to get better. But our guys are continuing to fight, and we appreciate their efforts, and they've stayed pretty positive through everything.
You know, Michael, I think you make some great points, and I think from a coaching standpoint, an athletic department standpoint, hopefully administration throughout the school, and for the fans who really understand a little bit about it, you know, your point about playing at a level in the Big East every night compared to playing at that level in the Horizon League, and I don't want to put any Horizon League teams down, but you're right. You're recruiting for two different leagues. There are a number of players in the Horizon League this year, last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. They weren't going to get picks from the Big East. They weren't going to be called by the ACC. They were Horizon League level players, and for the NCAA tournament or the conference tournament or a couple of big games during the year, mentally and physically, you're right, it's there. But the grind of the Big East, you go from tough game to tough game, the travel, the arenas, everything that makes up the Big East, it's not a game here and there. It's not just a tournament. It's every night. So at 12-14 overall, this is an area the Bulldogs haven't seen for a few years, but I really think your greater point is, and I agree with it totally, Butler basketball rose so quickly to the top of the national attention, and now it's in a position to grow some more, but grow on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and I think you have to keep that in mind. I think we have to keep a big picture in mind. You know, I don't, you know, I think it was a move that had to be made. I think it was, you know, for the long-term health of our program, for the long-term health of the university. I think it was obviously something that, you know, is very good. Now, part of that, there has to be some growth from a program standpoint. We have to recruit a different type of player without changing the same character things that we look for in our recruits. And it's gonna take some time. We have shown the ability. You look back over the course of the year, we've had a lot of close games. We've been in games with some of the best teams in the country, and we've shown we've been able to compete. We've got to be able to get to the point where we do it more consistently. We suffered obviously a season-ending injury with Roosevelt, and how much difference does he make? I don't know. Does he help you win a couple games? You'd like to think so, but I don't think he necessarily one guy puts you, in the top half of this league. I don't think that's the case. But, you have to continue to develop your roster, both through skill development and helping the guys on your current roster get better, and you also have to develop your roster by recruiting a Big East level player.
Coach, when you look at this season as a whole, and I agree, you played some outstanding teams, and you played them very well at times, and you could have at least four or five more wins if the ball bounces a little bit differently. But here nor there, at this point, with the grind of the Big East and even moving into that, you had a great tournament down in Florida with some very good teams. What is the biggest thing that you, as a staff or that your players are realizing? Is it the continuous number of players with better athletic skill? Is it a more physical game? Is it just you're going up against quality teams that you don't have a lot of background on, how their coaches approach things, how they normally play? Is there two or three things that kind of stand out for you guys that you look back and or your players are saying, man, it just keeps coming at you. Every game it just keeps coming at you.
Yeah, it's probably a combination of several things. I think our players are getting a great experience. In 2007, 2008, they make the finals of the preseason NIT, and they're playing in Madison Square Garden, and TV is upset, fans are upset because they made it and not the team that was supposed to make it to Madison Square Garden, and now you're playing a conference game in Madison Square Garden, and you're playing in all these markets that the Big East provides. It's a great experience for our guys to go out and compete. I think our players understand that, and I think it shows in how they've gone out and played. You look at how we played Creighton here at home. There's not a lot of teams. There's a handful of teams that have played Creighton as competitively as we did on that one night. And we look at it by how our guys approach practice. There hasn't been, moping around. There hasn't been heads dropped. They come into practice every day with a spirit to improve. From a roster standpoint and who you're competing against, I think, like we talked about the Horizon League, maybe one of the best years of the Horizon League has had recently, was the first Final Four run that Butler made, and the league had three pros, in the whole league, and that was on the high end. The Horizon League may have a pro every year, where now you're playing against a pro every night. In the Big East, each team is probably got a guy that has a legitimate shot at being a an NBA pro, and so you're facing a different level of competition. You're even you're facing bigger bodies, stronger bodies, longer, more athletic bodies, and there is an adjustment that has to be made.
Michael, let's talk a little bit about some of the players. You bring up the talent level of individuals from the Horizon to the Big East. One of the teams that you've gone up against is Creighton. They came out of the Missouri Valley. A lot of our listeners in the Midwest area have an interest or at least a knowledge of Creighton. And let me ask you from a coaching standpoint, I know what the media says, I know what the hypers and everybody else says, but in your opinion, when you guys looked at him on tape and as a staff and you watch him play in person, how good is Doug McDermott?
He's the best player in college basketball, and there's no question about it. Will he end up being the best NBA player out of the whole group? I don't know. That's far down the road, and that's for other so-called experts to predict. But I do know he is the best college basketball player in the game today. He is special. He can score it at all three levels, meaning he can beat you from the three, from an NBA 3-point line. He can beat you in the mid range off of pull ups and ISOs in the mid range, and he can beat you in the post. He can score it every which way. He plays as well without the basketball in his hands as anybody in the game today. He's constantly moving. He's constantly working and reading off the screens. And he's got a group of guys around him that as we scout, I call the perfect role players. They understand their role. They're talented players. They shoot it extremely well. And what they don't have in their transition to the Big East, where they don't match up sometimes in size and physicality and athleticism, they combat that with great shooting. And they have lineups in there at times that they can shoot it from the perimeter at all five positions. They can bring the Artino kid in and give you a little presence inside. And then it doesn't hurt when you have the best player in college basketball. He can make up for a lot of things. And they're a joy to watch unless you're preparing to play for them. And then it makes you sick. But they are a fun group. When I get home, I tend to watch bits and pieces of games occasionally from the house, because you watch so much film during the day and of your opponents. But when I flip through and I see them, I tend to find myself watching them a little bit more, because they play, especially on the offensive end, at such a high level, and the different things that they can do and how they attack different teams in our league. Has been fun to watch, and Doug, like I said, he's the best player in college basketball. But he seems, I don't know him personally, but from what I've gathered and the little bit that we've competed against and how he's interacted with his teammates and the guys on our team and the things that he's said and communicated, he even pulled one of our younger guys aside and talked to him a little bit. Just seems to be a great young man, and somebody that you hope has a lot of success in this game.
Well, one thing I always notice about guys like that, obviously, just because you're a coach's son, I got a phone call. Sorry about that, guys.
You got to mute that, coach. Come on now.
Yeah, I just did. I'm sorry. just because you're a coach's son doesn't mean you're going to be a great player. But if you've got ability. It's just another case where you just pick so much up growing up in a coach's family, and you just put a little bit more on the line, especially when you're playing with your dad or for your dad, and he is a great player. Let me ask you about another player. He's a Butler Bulldog. What has Kellen Dunham learned this year? Outstanding player, still young, still developing, really good shooter. But he goes into a Big East conference where he has to face it every night, and they know everybody he plays, they know they've got a key on him. What has he learned this year about Kellen Dunham and about the game of basketball?
Well, he's learned what it's like to be a marked man in the Big East. He's learned we're somewhat offensively challenged. From an ability to score the basketball. I mean, you just look at numbers and you can see that. And Kellen's productivity, Kellen's percentages has taken a little bit of a dip here in Big East play. I think some of that has to do with just the attention that he's given. He came in this season, got off to a great start, and obviously he was marked on all the scouting reports, but people didn't have a great feel for what he could and couldn't do. And as you continue to go through a season, guys get a better feel for that, and they can defend you in different ways. Kellen's done a really good job of staying the course and just working on his game. I think he'll be the first to say that sometimes he can force a shot or two in a game that he needs to show a little bit more patience on and allow the offense to get him a better look. And then there's also going to be nights that those easy looks just don't come. you know, and you just got to continue to work and grind to get your opportunities to score. And he's obviously done a better job of putting it on the deck and getting to the foul line. You know, I think in one the next level of elevation in his game is you know, when he does drive and when he does draw the attention that he does from a defensive standpoint, to facilitate a little bit more. And that's something that he's never done or never been asked to do. And I think with the attention that he draws, it's something that he can become better at. And I do know this, that throughout the rest of the year and throughout the off season, Kellen Dunham's going to work to become the best player that he possibly can be. And he's a guy that I'm glad has a Butler uniform on and not something else.
Agreed, totally. Michael, when you look at the rest of this team, is there a player that has surprised you for the Bulldogs, someone who really has developed, has come out of a shell and maybe done more than what, even when you guys recruited him, even what you've seen, they've really played at a level, an intensity, a skill that you guys didn't think would happen at this point? Anybody on the team like that at this point?
Well, I think there's a couple guys. You know, I think, one, you start with Alex Barlow because, one, you didn't recruit him. You know, he came as a walk-on, and now he's a starter and a guy that you just can't get off the floor because of everything that he does for us. To a guy that couldn't get on the floor as a freshman, to a guy that, you know, just his game is elevated to where he can handle the ball against pressure. You know, he's not going to break you down off the dribble, but he can, if you close out wrong, and make mistakes, he can hurt you. He can, you know, he's shooting 38% from the 3-point line. You know, he's turned himself into a very serviceable college basketball player, and it's a great story. You know, I think you look at our two freshmen that are playing. You know, Shrabich is, I think, not been a surprise to us, maybe a surprise to the general basketball fan, but, you know, he was a guy that throughout the preseason and the non-conference season, you know, we kept talking about, hey, he just has a consistent approach to how he plays the game. He has a consistent approach to how he approaches practice. He's going to continue to adjust to the speed and the physicality of the game at this level, and when he does, he's going to be pretty good. And he's obviously given us a spark here in Big East play. He's moved himself into the starting lineup and been pretty successful at doing so. And I think he's a guy that you look towards the future that, you know, he can kind of be a steadying force for you in the middle. You know, he can stretch a defense a little bit. He can put it on the floor and drive it. He's a little bit undersized, which is not ideal, but he's been undersized his whole life, and he's learned how to play with it. He uses his body well. And so that's been good. And then I think the overall development of Elijah Brown has been good. You know, he's a guy that he's always been a scorer throughout his life. And I think, you know, his development as a complete player has been good for us. He, you know, his shot selection has improved. His defensive awareness has improved. And as he continues to become more aggressive in those two areas, it will continue to help us. So those are just three guys off the top of my head that have shown maybe to be able to play a little bit higher level than maybe initially anticipated.
Well, four regular season games left. You split two on the road, two at home. You've got Providence coming up, I believe, on Sunday at Hinkle, Villanova on the road, DePaul on the road, and then you finish up with Seton Hall. What are you guys looking to, other than wins, what do you want to accomplish in these last four games, regular season-wise?
Well, we want our guys to, like I said earlier, we want to play to a standard that's become Butler basketball. And you can define that however you want, but we define it as going out and playing hard, playing the right way, playing with a toughness and a competitiveness that, you know, the guys that have put the uniform on before you can be proud of. You know, let's go out and play Butler basketball and kind of focus on the process of playing at that level, and then the results are going to take care of themselves. But we want to make sure that we're playing to a level that when the horn ends, we can look back and be proud of how we showed ourselves, and just continue to grind and play out each possession in each game, just see where we are when all the dust settles. But we've got a good group of guys. You know, they're even throughout this tough stretch of the Big East, they're enjoyable to work with. They're enjoyable to be around. And overall, they're guys that I think Butler can be proud of. And it's just been a rough transition, which I'm not sure any program that was at the level that Butler was in Horizon League could have made in these 18 months.
Well, I think for the most part, when I've been able to catch games, the fans seem to continue to come out to Hinkle. They enjoy the competition. They enjoy rooting for the Dogs. With all the bad weather that has hit the Midwest and hit the Indianapolis area, Bulldog fans continue to support.
No question. They've been out. They've been full force. Our students have been great. The adults have been into it and fired up. And I think, you know, most fans within the state of Indiana are very knowledgeable basketball fans, and I'm sure some are frustrated with the losses, and trust me, we are as a staff, and the players are as well. But they've been out, and I think, you know, they've enjoyed, you know, the Dog days of January and February of, you know, instead of marching, you know, Youngstown State in here, you've got Georgetown and Marquette and teams of that nature. It's an exciting time for them as well to be able to experience this transition, and in due time we will be celebrating in it as well.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. I think there is a transition period for anyone at any time, especially when you're jumping into really one of the major conferences. Butler basketball is going in the right direction. Michael, I know that for you, you're not only coaching a team, practice, game preparation, but you guys continue multitasking. You guys have to be recruiting too.
Yeah, and we're still out there. I mean, you're going to be here in the area tonight checking out a game, and I'll be down the road from you a little bit. But, you know, that's part of it. That's something that I really enjoy about the job, and you know, we will continue to look for right guys to fit Butler and to help us as we move forward here in the Big East.
Now, Michael, I'm not familiar, and I should be, and I'm sorry. Big East tournament comes up. Do all teams in the Big East participate?
Oh yeah. Okay. The Big East tournament's just like the Big East tournament's been for years. It'll begin on March 12th, and goes four straight days there in at Madison Square Garden, just as it always has. And you know, we just came back from there and been fortunate to be in a lot of places. And when you walk in there, there's just a different aura about Madison Square Garden, and it's a special place to play, and we're excited to be a part of the atmosphere and everything that goes along with the Big East tournament. So something we were looking forward to, and obviously it's something I remember cutting a few classes in my high school days to kind of watch some of those afternoon games. hanging out in one of my coaches in the coach's office. I won't mention his name, but get a little pass, go down there and watch some basketball.
You know the good thing, and this keeps everybody focused, is the opportunity to make some noise comes in that Big East tournament, and I know you guys will have them ready to go.
Well, I think, you know, that time of year, it kind of re-energizes everybody, whether you're having a year like we are where you're struggling a little bit, or whether you know, you're Syracuse and Wichita State just kind of blowing through the deal. There's a different time, there's a different feel to it, and it kind of re-energizes everybody, but like I said, our guys have been fighting every day, and so I like where we're at from that standpoint. Our guys haven't cashed it in.
Well, I know this, nobody plays better when it comes tournament time than Butler does, so I expect that you get about, after your first win in the Big East tournament, it'll be a big win. We'll get you back on the show.
That sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Hey, tell Nicole and the kids I said hi. Keep it going, Michael. Good luck to Butler basketball the rest of the way. When we come back, we'll talk a little NBA. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts, Uvalar and Sons Chevy, Cadillac, and Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, you said NBA. We're going to talk NBA. I've got one question for you. And I'm not going to ask that question because that is actually a writer's question, someone who wrote in and asked you for the Coach K and Joe Show mailbag. But the question I've got to ask you is, what about the trade? I call it the trade.
When you say the trade, I'm assuming that we're talking about the trade that Larry Bird and the Pacers made yesterday.
Yes.
With Danny Granger going to the Sixers, and we pick up Evans in return and Lavelle Allen or something like that. I don't know. I got to be honest with you. I trust Larry and the Pacers. I trust that they feel this gave them a short-term and long-term a player that could grow and help the Pacers down the stretch and into other seasons. Granger, healthy, and maybe even in a short series or a playoff series, gives you a threat, or at least he always did, at 20 to 25 points a game, and did it not just, I mean, he could score. And I'm not sure about this trade yet. I'm going to be flat honest about it. I know that they pick up some perimeter shooting and some, not just perimeter shooting, but the ability to do things with the ball, do things off the dribble, a little healthier. But I got to be honest, I'm going to have to watch this play out for a couple weeks. I think that there are some other implications involved here, and that is getting something for Granger before they couldn't get anything for Granger. And I guess it was clear that he was not going to be a part of the future of the Pacers.
Well, all I can say is I hope that Evan Turner can play like he's played at Banker Life in the Big Ten tournament. He had some very special moments there. I haven't really followed him as much, you know, in the pros. I follow the Pacers, and him being on the Sixers, I didn't follow him a lot. But my first thought was, hopefully, he can bring that Banker Life magic that he's always had to the Pacers. Now, I can honestly tell you, my son was not happy. Reese, when he first found out about it, came stomping downstairs to my office downstairs and complained. Why would they get rid of Granger? But as you said, Larry Bird seems to be, seems to always do the right things. And, let's see how this shakes out.
Well, I don't think it's just Granger's ability to help the Pacers this season. It's what are they going to do with him long term? And if he's not a part of the Pacers, which it looks like he wasn't going to be, they wanted to get something out of him. Now, Evan Turner can score. I think he's averaging about 17 points a game. And I'm wondering if Bird doesn't see him being even more effective playing with the team that we're playing, that he's going to be playing with Paul George and the different cast of characters, that's going to create some more opportunities for him to do some things off the dribble and not just to score, but to hit the open man, to kick it off into Hibbert, those types of things. So I think they may see an Evan Turner that is healthier and more ready to go, although he has had an issue on, I think, the shooting hand at times. But I think he brings maybe a little bit more expanded game at this point in his career, something the Pacers feel like they have some weapons that will benefit from having Evan Turner. They also pick up another forward who has, he didn't score a lot of points, but I did notice coming off the bench for the Sixers, who are not very good right now. He was getting about 5 points and five rebounds. So what does that tell me? Here's a guy that can give him some minutes. If he's not going to bring a lot to the table offensively, at least he's going to get some rebounds. And we know that as you go down the stretch in the NBA tournament, you got to have some guys who can give you a rest here and there so your big guys stay out of foul trouble. They can come in and give you a couple minutes. And I can't remember an NCAA or an NBA tournament finals championship round where somebody that nobody expected, at least in one or two of the games, came out and just played really, really well. Big rebounds, big buckets, steals. And so I think the Pacers, Larry Bird, Frank Vogel and company are banking on adding pieces to finish up this puzzle. It was tough to let go of Danny Granger. I know a lot of Pacer fans were very sad about it. But you know what most of them said, Joe? They said, we have found out that even in Indiana, if Peyton Manning can go, anybody can go.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Granger has been a stable there for a while. And I think Larry's looking at this playoff run. What do we need? What can benefit us? What can, we're the strong, but let's try to get stronger. And just like I said, he's made moves that, I remember when Roy Hibbert was drafted, scratching my head saying, another draft pick wasted. And look what that man's done. Defensively, just an animal in the middle. And he's just been a great part of the team. And, quite honestly, a lot of these Pacers that are on the team now that got drafted by the Pacers, I didn't know anything about them. I really honestly did not. When they got drafted, I kind of scratched my head, my bald head, and said, hmm. And, Larry Bird apparently I guess we shouldn't doubt his talent ability. He had great talent, so I guess he knows what great talent is. And it's been fun to watch, and it's just been a joy to be a Pacer fan this year. It's been fun, and I'm ready. I'm fired up. And just like I said, Evan Turner's going to bring that banker life magic he's always had. If we need a half court miracle shot, we know who we got to go to, the Magic Man. He's the new Magic.
Well, the shrewdness of the Hick from French Lick continues to amaze, and I'm going to say this for Larry Bird. Not only was he a great player, Joe, but I think the time he spent as a head basketball coach in the NBA of the Pacers, and a lot of people said, that really wasn't Larry's forte, although they went to a championship finals, I think that he learned a lot, not just about from playing, I think he learned a lot about coaching on the NBA level and what little pieces it takes, really, what little pieces it takes to put the team together at different stages of the season and make it click. Let's remember that they dismantled a Pacer team a decade ago that had some pretty good talent on it, but the mix was terrible for the Midwest, for Indianapolis. They had a lot of guys that acted like thugs and gangstas. Yeah, that's Coach K calling gangstas. And they dismantled them and said, we're going to start over. And it took a little while, but they've done it. And I think his time as a player, his time as a coach, his time in vice president operations and management of bringing players in, the time he took off and stepped away for a little bit for health purposes and coming back, I think it has all come together to create a resume, a skill set that makes the Hick from French Lick a very shrewd NBA management person. Now, you're doing these moves for one thing, Joe, and you know what those are. To beat the Heat, and get a chance to win an NBA championship, right?
Yes. Yep, that's right. And might I add, we've also added yet another thing to the Pacers. We've added Hall of Fame color man, Slick Leonard. to the Pacers as well. I want to congratulate Slick on that. I mean, that was a great honor for him. And I'd love to have him back on the show soon to talk about him being named to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt that he'll come back on. And might I add this, Joe, that it was after Slick Boom Baby Leonard was on the Coach K and Joe show that he got a call from the Hall. Yes, I'm using the phrase, a call from the Hall. And I made several mentions of it in my tweets that it's not just Bobby Leonard, and I think Bobby Slick Leonard would be the first to say it, but it's also his wife Nancy. Those two have been a basketball partnership for years, and I will say this, I said it before, I've said it to Bobby Slick Leonard, I've said it in tweets, I've said it on Facebook, and I'm going to say it again on the Coach K and Joe show, maybe ad nauseum to some of you, I believe that Indianapolis is a sports hub today for college and pro sports. I believe we have the Colts today. I believe we have the Pacers because Bobby and his wife gave up everything for the Pacers, for the state of Indiana, put on that telethon, did whatever they had to do, humbled themselves in any way they had to keep the Pacers in Indiana, in Indianapolis. Had we lost the Pacers at that time and not been recognized by the NBA folks, I don't think we'd be talking about the home of the NCAA, Lucas Oil Stadium, Bankers Life, all the things, amateur athletics, all the things that go on in Indianapolis. And I know that Bill Hudnut and many other people were responsible, but I still say Bobby Slick Leonard had a big piece of that.
I will say, I had the honor, and I call it honor because I did not know her until I talked to her, to talk to Nancy for about 10 minutes the day before we had Slick on. And, to have a wife like that that supports him, you can just tell talking to her. I mean, to have someone like that, I mean, to be successful, you've got to have a wife. I think, you had a wife that was very supportive of you, and I think that it's always important to have that. And he has that in Nancy. And might I add, even though U of E did not win last weekend, they played well after Marty was on the show. And I think that, if Butler has a big weekend, Michael might want to schedule us for, every week until the end of the season.
Well, we're not done with the NBA discussion of another person who's been on the show, an alum, Tyler Zeller of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was on the show a few weeks back. Since then, the last couple games for sure, 18 points, 15 rebounds, 16 points, 13 rebounds. Hey, I don't know what it is. Is something in the air when we're talking? We breathe life into people. I'm not sure what it is, Joe, but Tyler Zeller and the Cleveland Cavaliers are on a 7-8-game win streak, something like that. They're becoming a beast in the division, and they're pushing their way to try to make a run for the playoffs. Kyrie Irving, what an NBA All-Star game, tremendous MVP of the All-Star game. And, folks, people can question defense in the NBA. I can tell you there's none in the All-Star game. What was it, Joe, 160-something to 150-something, highest scoring All-Star game of all time?
Yeah, it was an offensive spectacle. I don't know if there was a defensive MVP in the tournament in that game.
No, I doubt about that. I doubt that, but it was the highest scoring All-Star game of all time. So we're pretty proud of the alumni of the Coach K and Joe show. Of course, Bobby Slick Leonard, as we said, a Hall of Famer. Tyler Zeller on a roll right now in the NBA, and maybe we need to get Cody back on and get him on a roll. I mean, he's solid. He is pretty consistent every night. In and out, and he's still learning a lot, but maybe it's time to get Cody back on the show, and maybe we'll zap that career up about 10 points.
Yeah, I mean, we might need to start charging him to be on the show.
Hey, let's jump real quickly over to, believe it or not, folks, Major League Baseball. I think the Reds had a huge signing. They were in an arbitration situation with Homer Bailey. He is one of their best young pitchers. His record doesn't always show it, but he does give them innings, and he has shown his ability to pitch no-hitter. He has shown his ability to pitch in big games. They were able to ink him to 6 years, I think $105 million with a $20 million option year or something like that. The thing that I was – I don't know if you saw anything on this, Joe, and maybe we need to bring our Reds man on. He was in arbitration asking for 11. The Reds were offering him 8-something, and the next thing we know, he's signing 6 years for $105 million. That's above the 11, well above the 8. I'm just confused on where it went from arbitration to that kind of a contract so quickly. I'm sure there's reasons for it, but it was interesting, and I was surprised that the Reds, not surprised that they would ink Homer Bailey. I mean, they had to because somebody else was going to go take him, but they shelled out another $100 million.
Yeah, that would be a good question for Jeff Cochran. He follows it very closely, and he might know why the big jump, because that is quite significant jump there that he made. I know he's been consistent for the Reds, and I guess they decided they needed to lock him in.
Well, they've got a lot of money out there, Phillips. They've got a couple $100 million contract sitting there with Votto, who I don't know if he'll ever be more than a 30 home run man, maybe 320, hopefully. And then they threw another $100 million out there. Aroldis Chapman, different people out there. They're still going to have to figure long-term or if they're going to keep them long-term. But maybe it's time to get old Jeff Cochran on the show next week. Get Jeff Cochran on the show next week and talk a little baseball. I do want to add one thing before we go to break. During the Michael Lewis interview, talking with Michael, my other phone rang. And it was not my cell phone. It was the other phone here in the office. And I don't know why someone was calling, but I checked and looked, and it was my dear old dad, my father, former coach Ed Schulteis, and he was probably checking without thinking the show. He should have been listening to the show about our trip to Indianapolis to watch, as I said, with Michael, my nephew and godson, Matt Schulteis, against Ben Davis and Cathedral playing each other. But that was the call that came in, Joe. So I'm kind of like Dan Levitard. My dad came in on the show, at least almost did. We'll have to get him on sometime and talk back.
Yes, we do.
Also ask him why he's calling in to the calling my house during the show when he should be listening to it. Let's go to break. And when we come back, JoJo, Coach K and JoJo Show, when we come back, we'll do a little mailbag and see if we can answer a few questions. And I'll also, if we have time, mention a tweet conversation I got in this morning about the IHSA briefly. Won't be long because we'll have to have that on the show at some point. Let's go to break. You are fortunate to be listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper. We've all heard the commercial, 15 minutes could save you 15. Folks, let me tell you, it won't take 15 minutes for us to save you money. Give Ubelars a call at 1-800-937-USA1 or visit us online at ubelar.com. We'll tell you the facts, treat you right, no bait and switch, and best of all, we will save you money. Ubelar Chevy Cadillac, Toyota Scion in Jasper, where customers send their friends for a lifetime of savings in 15 minutes or less since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
It's not the U.S. Postal mailbag. It's not the Joe mailbag. It's the Coach K mailbag.
New York and New Jersey love Coach K. Go Hoosiers! Coach K speaks the truth! Woo!
Now here's Coach K and Joe with this week's Coach K's mailbag.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. It's time for the ever-popular Coach K mailbag because, as some people in New York and New Jersey think, Coach K speaks the truth. So I guess it's time to see if he speaks the truth. Coach, first question comes from Glenn in Jasper. Should Evan Turner feel like Christmas came early to go from a lowly Sixer team to an NBA title possibility Indiana Pacer team?
Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever it is that anyone celebrates around the world, Easter, Valentine's Day, repeating itself, Groundhog Day, whatever celebrations or holidays are out there, that's what Evan Turner ought to be thinking. Here's a guy that comes in from a city who everybody says loves, the great sports city they love. That's not a great sports city. It's just a bunch of radicals. And it's a franchise that's been struggling, continues to struggle, has poor management. He gets an opportunity to come into a playoff-ready team. They're going to the playoffs. The only question right now is will they be the number one seed in the East? Can they hold on to the best record? They've struggled just a little bit here, but that happens. It's a hiccup. But, yes, Evan Turner should be on his knees or thanking his lucky stars or whatever. And, truly, he should be so happy that he's going to have an announcer like Boom Baby Leonard. He should be so happy that he's playing with Paul George, Hibbert and company, Frank Vogel. He should be so happy he's coming back to the Midwest. And he should be so happy he should be on the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, and our Indy correspondent Don Schulteis just reminded me you forgot Festivus.
Oh, Festivus for the rest of us. Absolutely. Festivus, Christivus, which is a Schulteis tradition Rick Schulteis has up in Indy. Christivus, you name it, should be a part of it. Evan Turner, you have won the Powerball. Believe me, the Powerball of basketball.
Okay, next question comes from Harry in Dubois, and he asks the question, why did they not move the IU-Iowa game the next day to Banker Life Fieldhouse since Iowa was already in the area?
You know, that's a great question, and that was something I tweeted immediately, play it in Indianapolis. First of all, unless Fred Glass had a concern about season ticket holders and how to honor that, I don't know. I know that they were in discussion with the people at Bankers Life, and I believe Bankers Life was open to that game happening. Now, Don Schulteis, our Indy correspondent, Kyle Medenrip, maybe somebody like that can let us know why, if there was a problem in Indianapolis or not, but I'm sure Fred Glass was looking at how do we make sure that our corporate business partners and our season ticket holders are taken care of, because, you know, you have a lot of Bloomington-based people that would struggle getting up possibly to Indianapolis. And you say, Coach K, that's not true. Yes, it is. Between putting students on the road, older fans, who weather conditions, all those things could have been a concern for Fred Glass. But maybe Don Schulteis can shed some light, or Kyle Nenrip, if he's listening this morning, can shed some light on that. But that's a great question, and it's a question I asked. I believe they should have held it there.
Next question comes from Terry in Washington, and he asks the question, the IHSA draw is this week, and your son Josh is an assistant coach at Bar Reeve. What advice have you given him to get ready for his first sectional as a high school coach?
Josh and I have not talked much concerning preparation for the IHSA tournament because he's still got regular season games and he works for an outstanding head coach. But once the draw comes out, Josh and I will probably sit down and talk about how the draw sets up, how the regional sets up, and we'll probably talk about how we prepare mentally, physically, dealing with the players, because there's multiple approaches as you prepare for the tournament, Joe, and it's a great question. I mean, the head coach prepares differently and works with the players differently. The assistant coaches have tasks that they're given. Maybe I know as a head coach we used to give each assistant coach a team in the tournament that we could possibly be playing in the first couple rounds, sectional, regional, to start scouting, to start preparing a game plan. But there's also how you deal with the players as the head coach, how you deal with the players as different levels of assistant coach, and those types of things. So at this point, he doesn't need a whole lot of advice from me because Coach Hughes and his staff just, you know, do a great job, and Bar Eve's the real deal. And they've played well, and I believe they'll play well come sectional tournament. But, Joe, we might also add, since this has come up, we are really going to be focusing next show on the IHSAA, or the IHSAA draw, how it affects sectionals in this area, how it affects sectionals up in Indianapolis. I know our crack Indy Hoops correspondent Don Schulteis will break out a bunch of that. And, you know, we'll talk about the sectionals, and we hope to get some coaches or some media people to come on and talk about some of the teams specific to the sectional that they will be calling or coaching. And I know coaches don't like to get too involved in that yet because there's still regular season games to play. But, Joe, that's a timely question, and you can kind of add to what I just said. Next week's show will have a lot to do with the IHSAA tournament draw.
Yes, we will. If you love IHSA sectional draw as much as I do, you don't want to miss next week. I'm going to make a marketing effort. I'd love to not only have media people on the show and some coaches if we can, just as you said, they don't like to focus on sectional yet. But I'd like to also get to have some callers call in. If you've got a favorite school, call in and tell us why they're going to win. Why is Lagodi got a chance? Why has Bar Eve got a chance to go to state? What makes Southridge one of the favorites over there? And it'd be fun to do that.
Well, Joe, I love Coach Butcher, and I love Chad Wade, and I love all those Lagodi players and fans and Coach Wagoner, but they don't have a chance. I would be absolutely floored if Lagodi would come out of there a winner. Now, having said that, I have seen situations where a team that had two or three wins upset in the section, not the final game, but in their opening rounds, beat teams that were 19-1, 18-2, 17-3. And I kid you not, it has happened, and it has happened in the local area. And for whatever reason, those teams the good team couldn't shoot that night, and the bad team couldn't miss. And it wasn't a slowdown. It was just one team hit and one team didn't. And so it could happen. But I don't see it. Lagodi fans, I'm sorry. I don't see it.
And that's why this draw is so important. You know, if Lagodi is to win, they're probably going to need to draw Washington Catholic and Shoals in their side of the bracket and hope to make it to the final game and then come up with a Jack Butcher strategy of holding the ball or something, you know, to do it. You know, the draw is very important. It's very important, going to be very important in that Southridge sectional. There's a lot of really good teams. You know, who gets paired up with does a Mitchell and a Pike Central get put into the upper bracket with just one of those teams while Washington and Jasper or Heritage Hills or Vincennes or Southridge are all four on the bottom bracket and have to fight their way to that final game? You know, the draw is very important.
Draws are always important. In the end, people say, well, you got to win three or you got to win two or whatever it might be. But draws do make a difference. Getting your feet wet that first night makes a difference. And as far as being able to hold the ball, the big thing about it is not just deciding to hold the ball. The big thing is, can you hold the ball? Do you have the ball handlers to do it? Do you have the mental toughness to do it? Can you make the right pass at the right time to do it? You know, it makes a, there's, it really is an art. It really is something that you have some ability to do. And more than anything else, Joe, to hold the basketball, and I've had teams that have done it, and I've had teams that have done it to us, you have to be mentally tough enough, convinced enough, 100%, to be able to pull it off. Because otherwise you get shaky, you shoot it too quick, the first opening you get, you make a soft pass, you move the ball way too much instead of taking time off the clock when you need to, should to. It's going to be really interesting, Joe. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, Joe is going to go after our next guest, Kurt Guxell, WBDC Sports Editor. He's the voice of the Southridge Raiders, and we'll continue talking a little high school basketball when Kurt joins us. Of course, we'll start talking about the Southridge Raiders. We're going to take a very, very quick break, and when we come back, Sports Director, WBDC, and the voice of the Southridge Raiders will join us, Kurt Guxell. You're listening and loving it to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? We'll team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back. We're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. We got a little John Mellencamp working with us today. We've had a great show so far. Michael Lewis from Butler was with us. We talked some NBA. We talked some Reds baseball. We talked a little bit of everything. We started talking a little bit about high school basketball, and we're going to continue that trend because our next guest, even though he's a Miami Dolphin fan, we're not going to talk about Incognito and Jonathan Martin, because that's been done to death by two guys with the same first name. It's ridiculous on the mothership. It's all a bunch of bull, in my opinion, anyway. The media made it bigger than it was, and now they got to save face by trying to keep it going for a while. We're talking with the voice of the Southridge Raiders. There's no team playing any better, at least on the wins-loss column at this point. And I don't know if Coach Rosh is responsible or if Kurt Guxell is responsible for the Raiders' success. Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you today?
Well, we're doing pretty good because there's no ice. There's no snow, there's 50-degree temperatures, their sun is shining, and we are getting closer to the IHSA sectional draw. We're getting closer to tournament fever. And, Kurt, I've missed you. You haven't been on for several shows, and I didn't know what happened. Joe made you mad or what, but it's good to have you. Let's talk a little Raider basketball. Coach, our Duke, this team... I think, and you can correct me, I have no problem with it, 15-4 at this point?
Right, 15-4, winners of nine straight.
Nine straight, and a team that started out of the gates and everything looked good, and then it kind of hit a hiccup for a while. But since then, I guess you would say after Christmas, however you want to lay it, this team has played pretty consistent. Coach has them in the game that he wants them in, at least from the standpoint of what the scoreboard is showing. Your thoughts on strengths, reasons for them playing this way?
Well, I think they've really played very well on the defensive end. They've gone more to a matchup zone, and they have a lot of length. They start 6'8", 6'5", 6'2", around the perimeter. They bring another kid off the bench that has a huge wingspan, and that's that matchup is you know, kind of Don Boozy's defense that he likes to use. And they've just been really good on the defensive end. They rebound very well. They don't turn the ball over. And Coach Rash is better than anybody around, and I go to a lot of practices. They work a lot individually with their guys. And they do a lot of individual work. And I know you got to work on your team stuff and your scouting stuff, but there's not a day goes by that each guy on that team doesn't do something a little bit on their own game, whether it's extra practice or a pre-practice. And you know, they work, you know, groups of two or groups of three at a time, kind of like the college guys do. And, you know, they're just very well connected right now. And they beat some good – it's weird. They struggled against the team – their losses come against teams that weren't very good. And they've reeled off a lot of wins against one-loss teams there in that stretch when they played really good basketball. And, Coach, they played games where they've had to run with people, teams that pressed them. Then they've had played some grinded games, and they've been successful in that too. So, you know, they're doing a lot of good things right now.
Well, one of the things that you pointed out, and people may look on the roster and see the size, the height, but you pointed out the length of the players, and I think that people have started to realize in basketball, we used to see it a lot on the pro level, but the length of the player, hands outstretched, taking away passing lanes, as defense has mm-hmm. become a critical part of the game. If you can move your feet and you have some length, you're longer in your arm reach and your hands and things, makes a big difference out there on the court.
Oh, it does, because you know teams want to you know, set ball screens, or they want to throw that you know, pass that maybe they don't go meet, or they want to, you know, not dribble to get a better angle. And with length and with guys that move your feet, that takes that away. So you've got to be crisp, but I think they've taken advantage of that length, and they've turned that defense is some good transition offense, because a lot of times you play a team that's really good defensively, and it's tough to get something going in your half court. But when you can steal some points on transition defense that's turned into offense, you know, you pick up mm-hmm. 10, 12 points a game by doing that. So, you know, they're very good at that because of that length and because they've bought into defense. And, you know, when you start listening to your coach this time of year, usually good things happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing about defense physically, when you play it physically and you play it well, it has an effect mentally on the offense that you're playing against. And those two things, the physical and the mental, are just so critical. Even though the offensive side may be able to match up with you physically, once you get in their head mentally, makes it a little tougher to make a pass, makes it a little slower to make a move, and don't quite get the shot squared up the way you need to. You rush it, and it changes the whole complexion of the game. You know, Southridge, Kurt, is a member of the PAC, Pocket Athletic Conference. That's a solid conference. Heritage Hill, South Spencer, Forest Park, it's a good conference, and they have fared well night in, night out in conference play.
Yeah, they have, and they'll play for the share of the title tonight. But they've, you know, they also went to Paoli and won when they were a one-loss team, and you know, beat several other teams. But yeah, it's a tough league and a very, you know, good coach league right now. So they're playing pretty well right now, and they're looking forward to the rest of the season. They just want to keep it going, and you know, that's tough. I mean, that's a game by game proposition, and if they're focused, they're a pretty good team. They kind of think if they play as well as they can play and do the things that their program's based on, that they'll have a chance to be in most games, if not win them.
You know, the other thing, not only is the Southridge Raiders boys basketball team having a banner year, the girls team, great year. Football had a solid year, and recently, I believe, one of the largest contingent of players named, I believe, to the academic All-State team. Southridge has to be pretty proud of their student-athletes and the teams as far as their competing and their success on and off the court and field.
Yeah, I think they are, and it's kind of cool because, you know, Kelly Murphy was the football coach, and he's now the principal. Mike Eidemann is the superintendent. He was in athletics, and I'm a firm believer in this. If you know, administrators that are former coaches, because they deal with a lot of things down through the years. They make great administrators because they know how those coaches are feeling, and they put some good coaches in place in that school, led by the athletic director, Brett Bardwell. You know, he's connected. He gets out there and goes to all the stuff, which ADs usually do, but, you know, he knows all the kids. He's connected with those kids, and, you know, he lets his coaches coach, and they have very few problems, and all the coaches are connected together. So, you know, it starts with the top, with the great administration. They all do well in the classroom. You know, all the kids do, as you mentioned, and, you know, and the teams are successful, and it's a lot of excitement at that school. Where you go to other places, you know, they're not connected. The administration's not connected with the coaches or with the teachers, or, you know, the fans don't come out to games, or there's no momentum or enthusiasm in a certain program. But there it seems like there is, and, you know, it starts at the top, and everybody's enjoying it right now. And I know that can, you know, change from time to time, or, you know, it's all, you know, based on, you know, how you're doing on the court or on the field. But right now, that, you know, they've got it going, and there's a lot of people to, you know, credit that to.
Well, just like it takes a team on the court, it takes a team in the administrative group. You got to have a good head coach, but you got to have the people in place who are going to be willing to do the things that need to be done behind the scenes, so to speak, to keep these kids moving in the right direction. You know, we're talking about the IHSA tournament draw coming up, and I'm sure we'll have you a part of that, giving us some input when that happens. But Kurt, I got to ask you something. This 3A sectional that's going to be held at Southridge this year, I was looking at the teams. I was looking at how teams are playing with records. I've got to believe that if you can get back to the old days of the Southridge sectional, that this particular year of class basketball, 3A sectional level, I got to believe the teams coming in, how competitive they are, their location to Huntingburg. Huntingburg Memorial Gym, I believe, is going to be rocking the way we used to see it in the old one-class system.
Oh, I agree, and I said that, and I, you know, I'm not, yeah, I wasn't a fan of class basketball, but I was fortunate enough to cover that sectional when it was two-way, when Forest Park, Southridge, Perry, maybe a Crawford came, and it was not packed like it used to be, but it was packed on those certain nights, and I felt sorry for all the people that had to shuffle off to Washington where there was no enthusiasm, and I think this 3A is going to be much of the same. You know, with Jasper Southridge back in the same deal, Lincoln, Heritage Hills, Washington with their tradition, and they're coming on under Coach Miller with the young team, and their fans will show up. You know, you get that Friday night semifinal, that doubleheader that night, or maybe the Wednesday night doubleheader because there are seven teams, and that place is going to be packed depending on what the draw, you know, plays out. But, I mean, And it's because there's good teams in there. You know, a lot of people want to blame class basketball about stuff like people don't show up for games. If your school, if your team puts a competitive product out on the floor, that's the biggest draw there is. And when you don't, and when nobody cares about your program, and there's no enthusiasm or no momentum, people don't show up for games. But those are the people that want to quickly blame everything on class basketball. But if you let your program drop, that's when attendance drops. But going back to your original statement, it will be. These teams bring fans, and these teams are good. I mean, there's four or five teams, depending on that draw, that will play deep into that sectional on a Saturday night.
I agree with you 100%. I think the fact that you have good teams, I think that you have proximity, and I think you have teams that have competed against each other during the season. Almost every game has been close. And the fact that it has been close, you'll have teams that want to get a little, I don't want to say, I'm going to use the term revenge because people can connect with that.
Right.
But here's an opportunity to go back into the sectional and maybe have that chance to beat that team that got you earlier in the year when maybe you weren't playing as well, or maybe you knew you should have played better. But more importantly, they all know they can compete against each other. And, you know, that's why I'm going to go out on the limb that I go out on, and I'm going to say that there's no reason Jasper shouldn't win that sectional. They beat just about every team during the regular season. They're playing as well as anybody. And I think they got talent. I think they got size. I think they got guard play. I think they got shooters. I don't see any reason why they can't win it. On the other hand, Ben Simmons is solid. Heritage Hills, they've struggled a little bit through late January, early into February. I should say mostly February. Southridge playing well. Washington still trying to find its way. But this sets up to be a fans sectional, and I can just hear the echoes in the gym, the popcorn smell, the crowd bustling in, those sounds that you only get at Memorial Gym.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think any of those four teams that you'd mentioned, if they're playing at the top of their game, and some of them have very little margin for error, or they'll be bounced. But if everybody's playing at their top of their game in that four-team grouping, there's no reason why any of them can't win. You know, and maybe they won't even have to go through every one of those teams. You know, that's just the way that draw is going to be in that 17 deal. You know, it was like that for the girls. There was a team sitting in there in the Friday night semifinal that, you know, wasn't very good, but they ended up taking, like, Vincent's girls down to the wire, and they were almost into the championship game. So whoever gets in that deal on a Friday night in that 7-teamer will be sitting pretty, and if it's one of the favorites, even more so. But when you got a 7-team deal and an extra night of action, especially in that gym, that venue with these teams, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. Let's switch over to something I know you just love. I know you stay up all night long into the wee hours of the morning, probably watching right now, and that's the Winter Olympics. Kurt, what's your take on the Winter Games?
I watched about 15 minutes of the Winter Games, I hate to tell you, but that was yesterday's hockey game. I only watched it when it got to be 2-2 because there was a sudden death or a finality to it that it was, you know, great TV. But, you know, give me the summer games, the track, the swimming, the basketball, and some of that stuff, and I like that a little better. But I guess we got a big hockey game coming up today with U.S. and Canada again.
Yeah, we do. And at men's semifinal, I think, of course, our gals got beat by Canada in the gold medal game after winning 2-0 with 5 minutes to go, they end up losing an OT or extra sudden death, whatever they call it. To headlines, Kurt, the good guys, the bad guys, the good boys, the bad boys, and so on. Ray Rice, someone who a lot of people have looked at as was a great ambassador, a good ambassador to football, never saw any negatives on him, running back, solid. He gets on video bopping his fiance in the head, knocking her cold. What is it with these professional athletes who know they're on the radar all the time? He's out in Vegas, which has a camera every 2 square inches you walk. What in the heck is going on?
I have no idea. And then they're worried about this guy from Missouri. You're worried about him playing in the NFL? I mean, you know, that's a story. You know what I'm saying? I mean, They worry about some of the dumbest stuff, but then they don't, you know, this Ray Rice deal, again, on all accounts, a decent guy, but, you know, there's got to be some discipline taken.
Yeah, it's we'll have to see all the facts when they come out, but we'll just have to see what goes on. We have our indie contributor, Don Schulteis, joining us now with Kurt Kuchstel. Guys, I'm going to kind of just, because we haven't talked with Kurt in a while, And Donnie up in Indy, the IU game with Purdue, and I know it didn't have the emotional interest that it's had in the past, but Kurt, we'll start with you and then jump over to Don. Where does an IU go after that? And my gosh, Purdue comes out and gets blistered last night. Kurt, what's your takeaway from that IU-Purdue game?
Well, it wasn't very pretty, and Purdue was kind of like the wounded team. That's how it goes in the Big Ten. You know, you come off a loss, you're coming back home, and you need a win and usually get it. But on the flip side, Indiana should have been more prepared and ready to play against their rival. So, I mean, that whole getting smashed like they did wasn't good. And, you know, and with the thing at the Assembly Hall this week, usually they were going to get right back on the horse and they become the home team against the visiting team. But they got that postponed, so they had to think about it a lot. But it was disappointing for an Indiana fan coming into that. That was one of those that they thought they could get. But from the very beginning, Purdue outplayed them, outperformed them, out-executed them, out-prepared for them, and that's what they got. You got the result that you deserve that day.
Don, does Coach Crean and his staff take – should they be taking responsibility for what we're seeing out there from this Hoosier team?
Well, the buck stops with them, Coach K, as you know, and they better be taking responsibility because the fans are not happy. I think the Twitter lines and the blogs were hammering Coach Crean. It just tells you what coaching's all about. You're on top of the world last year as the number one ranked team and picked to be in the Final Four, and granted they didn't make it, but then this year he's being kicked around by the same fans, and it's just been crazy. But I will tell you that this IU team played hideously at Purdue. I mean, it was a hideous showing. And I was guest host coming into that weekend, and I said, given the Perea problems, that they were slipping down the pole, Coach K, if you remember. And I said that I was not convinced they weren't going to West Lafayette and lay a big old egg. And, boy, after that first half, the start of the second half, they just talk about what Michael Lewis said. They cashed it in. And you got to worry about this IU team right now.
And Kurt, Don did say that. He said this team was slipping down the pole, and I was one that said I thought the Hoosiers would make a go of it. Kurt, let me ask you, the Perea situation, is it a symptom of a bigger problem on this team as far as leadership in the locker room and on the floor? Is it some isolated incident with an individual kid? Or again, as I said, is this just a symptom of a bigger problem with this group at this time?
Well, we don't know because we're not there every day like they are. That could be a problem. There could be a bunch of guys doing what he did, just not got caught, or it could be a leadership issue. And, you know, and Donnie mentioned everybody after Crean, and maybe deservedly so. But on the same deal, I mean, if that's what he's got to deal with, maybe it's not all coaching. If he's worried about his guys out messing around, I mean, that's on the players. You know, and they're getting scholarships to play. They're not getting scholarships to stay out till 3:30 in the morning getting, you know, public intoxication or whatever they're getting. So some of it's got to go on now. I mean, I'm a coach defender. I'm not just on train. It could be anybody. I'm going to,
okay.
You know.
And I understand, and I think there's some piling on going on. But at $4 million or whatever, he should expect some of it. But is there no curfews anymore? Is there no assistant coaches checking on players like they used to? Do the kids not police themselves? I'm asking, 2 days before a game, should a player, I don't care if he's in college, I don't care if he's 21, I don't care what he is, should he be out at 3 a.m.?
No. I mean, that's
– I would agree with that, Kurt, that no, he shouldn't.
I would think if it was you or Donnie, if you had something important to do on Saturday, whether it be a test or if you're working in a professional life or if you're playing college basketball, that they give you a scholarship to do, I think at that age, you got to be a little bit more responsible. And it's for all 12 or all 13 of those guys. You know, again, maybe it is a situation where the coach has got to, and the staff and the program's got to, crack down on it or whatever. But after a while, you know, you got to be responsible for your actions. And if it's the rest of those guys doing the same thing, shame on them. They shouldn't be at Indiana. They shouldn't be in a place that values basketball. Or I'm not a person to come to on player issues of getting in trouble, even at my high school level.
I'm not rolling over Crean, but the buck stops with him, and
yeah, well,
fans are
definitely
brutally on him up here for sure. And I think there is going to be changes with this team at the end of the year. Quite frankly, I think there's going to be a few players that will not be back. And these guys got to step up, I agree, and take their position. I mean, there is no reason why an IU basketball player should be behind a wheel at 3:30 in the morning with a 0.15 alcohol level. I mean, there's just no reason, because you can call the sugar daddies and they'll come pick you up. I mean, there's no reason why you have to get behind that wheel. Call one of the sugar daddies.
Guys, exactly. Let me redirect this just a little bit. Kurt, I'm going to start with you. No, the discussion's great, but I want to make sure we've got about 8 minutes left live, and I want to make sure we get a little bit more into this. Kurt, start with you, and then Donnie, you can come in. Do we look at, and I'm not talking about just IU, I'm talking about all college programs. The last couple years, and then I'm not talking about the Perea situation specifically, but the last couple years we have seen what were vaunted recruiting classes coming in. At least that's what everybody said they were. Top 10, top 5, top 6, whatever. You watch their YouTube videos like my kids do, and they keep telling me how great these players are, and I say that's on YouTube and AAU. I don't buy it. My point would be, what was the focus too much on the best athlete and not enough on we got to get 5 or 6 really good players, and then we got to get 5 or 6 really good team players that fit different spots, knowing that we can lose somebody to the NBA draft, knowing that, you know, you can't have 10 stars on a team, or you can't have 10 super athletes and win in basketball or football or anything else. You got to have skilled players. You got to have situation players. And when I say situation players, I mean some shooters, some guys that will play defense and rebound for you. Have we gotten ahead of ourselves in recruiting to find the big highlight reel players, as many as we can find, and not thought about how you build a basketball team or any other type of team, how you build a basketball team, Kurt?
Oh, I think there's no doubt. I mean, coaches, they love talent. They are mesmerized, corrupted by it, and if they can't look past it. And that's exactly, I think that's what's happened with this group of guys that they got up there. I mean, you look at some of the guys around the state that they didn't get or been told that they didn't even think that were very good, and they let them guys slip away. Now they're helping every other team in the Big Ten. I just think that they think that they're going to get passed by if they don't take these talented guys. But, again, is it an evaluation thing? Because evidently these guys aren't as talented as they appear to have been. So,
Kurt, you've got three head coaches on IU staff. You got McLean, you got Buckley, you got Crean. I mean, you'd think that these guys would have some idea of what talent is. My take on it is that they were scrambling a few years back. They were trying to dig themselves out of the third kind of subpar season in a row. They were getting these commit. They were trying to scramble around, get commitments from anybody that had a quote unquote name on them to get a
right.
little buzz going with the program. And as Michael Lewis said, you know, you look up and then all of a sudden your roster is at this level. But was it put together to compete at a high level in the Big Ten? You know, obviously.
Then it goes to the other thing. Then you have to develop those guys that you got. If they're, you know, rough or not as good as you think they are, don't fit like they are, and that's been a big knock on that regime as well. And you got to do something. You got to recruit good guys, or you got to develop guys. And when you sit there and you're not doing any of it, that's what you get right now.
Guys, would you both agree? And Donnie, real quickly, we got about a minute left. Would you both agree that the biggest disappointment again is the consistency of the development? But we can't seem to close out, at least in a competitive way, in a way that we can feel good about the last 4 minutes of a game, win or lose.
I can't believe we can't shoot the ball from out better than we're doing right now. I mean, Yogi's the only bright spot, and he sometimes can be inconsistent. But it's a game of basketball, and you got to have some outside scorers.
Kurt?
Oh, I agree with Donnie. I turned on the game last night. Michigan State knocked out 17-3 with guys that I don't think that they would even take on Indiana's team. Travis Trice, obviously, he wants Gary Harris, obviously, but there are some other guys. And how do you not find shooters? You turn on TV every night and these teams have these guys that they bring off the bench that can shoot. Maybe James Blackman is the guy, but it's frustrating.
Johnny Marlin. With Johnny Marlin in there.
We want the scrappy walk-on. Okay.
Yeah, well, scrappy walk-ons or not, it's the Big Ten. We're going to have to end this program,
Joe.
I'm going to have to turn it back to you, Joe. But I love this. I love Kurt and Donnie and the group talking about this stuff. Thanks a lot, Kurt Huxell, for being with us. Tune in to WBDC and listen to his call of the Raiders. I believe they have South Spencer this weekend. Joe, take us home.
Well, as always, I'd like to invite everybody to go out to a high school basketball game this weekend. The boys are finishing up their season, and the girls, there's a regionals in the state of Indiana. And go out. There's no better value to take your family out and be entertained. So for Coach K, for Don Schulteis, for Kurt Guxell, this is Joe Milligan saying we'll see you next week.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelar & Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.